Welcome to the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast. This is Vinny. I'm here with my co-host, Mike. How are you, Mike?
Really good tonight, Vin.
You have to be good tonight. Since our last podcast, which was at the day of the trade deadline, we were talking about how, even though it looked bleak moments before the trade deadline, how they had turned it on, made the Cespedes trade, and we were looking ahead to better days. Little did we know, Mike, better days.
I think one of the things we did say on that 4:30 podcast right after the trade was that if you're going to have a devastating loss, and we know a week ago today they had about as bad a loss as a team can have, that there's no better day to do it than the day before the trade deadline, because that narrative can be flipped on its ear. Seems to like that's exactly what happened.
I can't imagine it getting flipped any more on its ear, Mike. I mean, from the moment of that we had that conversation before Friday night's game against the Nationals, starting 3-game series against the Nationals, the Mets go out and sweep that series, started by Friday night walk-off home run by Wilmer Flores, who, you know, 2 days before was starring in a remake of The Crying Game, and let's not take that in the wrong direction. So you have that. You have them on national TV completing the sweep on the Sunday night. You know, people going nuts. The stadium rocking like it hasn't been in its history. Crazy turnaround. Tying for first place by winning that last game. They go to Miami for 3 games against the Marlins. Everyone, including myself and Terry Collins, saying that they've got to guard against a letdown. They go there and they sweep the Marlins. And for 8.5 innings last night, they look like not only they sweep the Marlins, but they're just, you know, a juggernaut. They give us a slight pause by giving up 6 runs in the bottom of the ninth to turn an 8-0 laugher into a, you know, winning run at the plate situation. But that's all forgotten now. Similar to what you said about having a painful loss before the trade deadline, you have a scary win before a day off. Nobody cares about it when you get to the next day. So today's the day to just think about it. 6 straight wins since the trade deadline. And, you know, the most positive vibe around Met players and fans that I can remember, you know, since 2006, Mike.
Yeah. The city, it's always that reminder of when people say there's no more Met fans. Well, like I remember last year, the New York Times tried to write something up and make it sound like every single person walking around New York that did some Facebook study, you know, is now a Yankee fan. And, well, no, you know, like, did you get the Mets fans that are, like, in hiding, and then they come out of hiding? And a quick story about that, I really wanted to be there Sunday. I had family in for the weekend, and I couldn't get out there Sunday night. Kind of killed me, but I did enjoy watching on television. But, you know, I'm like you in a situation like what's going on right now. I want to be in the park. But I had this interesting experience to show you the current mood of the city Tuesday night, when the Mets were playing the Marlins. I was in Forest Hill Stadium watching a James Taylor concert.
Oh, nice.
So first of all, and I had a Mets shirt on. I didn't even think about it. I just had one of my million Mets shirts on. And usually I wear a Mets shirt and either nobody says anything to me or somebody makes some snarky remark like, you poor guy, or you have courage wearing that. You are nothing, right? Well, everybody was telling me, let's go Mets, high-fiving me. I'm like, oh, you know, because I had the shirt on. So that was the first thing. I'm like, this is different. But the crazy thing happened later. James Taylor's got some song he wrote about the 2004 Red Sox. So he's doing his little intro to it. And he's clearly got a little, like, arranged riff he's going to do. So he says something about, well, like, I know that I'm here where everybody's a Yankee fan. And a few people cheered, and not many. And then all of a sudden, a big Let's Go Mets chant starts up.
Oh, that's great.
And it's loud. And then he's still trying to go on, and he ignores it. You know, like, that didn't happen. And then he says something else about the Red Sox again, about, well, there's one thing about when the Red Sox get into the World Series, because he's trying to talk about 2004, and somebody in his crowd yells, Mookie! and then a very, very loud Let's Go Mets chant starts. It was the loudest the place was on life for anything. And so you just start laughing because you're going, everybody's sort of got like Met fever. It's like, what happened? But
that's great.
How it works, right? Yeah.
It's great. I know, because my understanding, I was at the game on Sunday, so I didn't, you know, Curt Schilling maybe made a statement that said that the Met fan base is not a fan base you want to wake up or something to that effect.
Yes, he did say that, yes.
And let's face it, they are awake. Look, we talked about this in the off season, that there was, you could tell that the fans were ready to get on board. They were just desperate for ownership to do something or for something to happen to get them on board. You know, that maybe the 11-game winning streak in April was a little too soon, and then it faded out. But, you know, now here it is, the summertime. You know, as soon as there was the hint, you know, that this could be something, people are jumping all over it, and it's great. It really is great. Now, you know, so they're in first place. They're two games up, you know, right now. The Nationals are playing. They're in the bottom of the seventh. They're actually leading 4-3. If the Nationals hold on and win, the Mets will be up a game and a half heading into the weekend. But there are still some other positive things going. You know, after, you know, David Wright, you know, hasn't played since April. A lot of talk about how it's, you know, going to be, you know, are we ever going to see him on the field? This kind of thing with this back, you know, it's not even an injury, it's a condition. So, you know, it'll never go away. He's been, you know, taking batting practice the last few days. I think he was in Port St. Lucie working out today. And now the word is that they're expecting him to start a rehab assignment on Monday. So you could be thinking about getting David Wright back, and that gets everybody pumped up. Although I would caution, who knows what the heck to even expect out of David Wright. So, you know, people are getting even more on the, oh my God, you know, things are positive in that field. But I guess we do have to at least talk about the slight negative. And you know, I'm not letting anything bring me down these days, Mike, but the news broke today, bad pun, that Jerry Blevins refractured his left forearm. The story is that it perhaps happened with him slipping off of the curb, which is a very Met-type injury. But anyway, you know, so he's not – we were talking in the last podcast about him potentially coming back and adding to the bullpen. And based on a night like last night when the bullpen struggled, you were looking forward to trying to get some pieces back to help out with the bullpen. He now is not a factor as somebody who can come back. And, you know, since the All-Star break, Jeris Familia has not looked nearly as dominant as he did prior to the break. So you're starting to see a little bit, a few cracks in the bullpen. You know, Sandy, we joked the other day, Mike, about Sandy's activity level coming out of nowhere. He struck again with another trade on Tuesday night, getting Erik O'Flaherty, a left-handed pitcher from the Oakland A's. You know, the idea being there's probably had some inside word of what was going on with Blevins right before they made that phone call. So they add O'Flaherty. Last night his Met debut did not go so well. So if you're looking, if the citizens of Panic City are looking to kind of come back out of their cave, there's a little bit of a concern that perhaps the bullpen is becoming a bit of a problem. Any thoughts on that, Mike?
Well, yeah. First of all, if Jerry Blevins, you know, I don't want to speak ill of the dead, so to speak, you know, because I think his career is over. Because if you step off a curve and break your arm, I mean, I'm not a doctor, but that arm's not in very good shape, right? I mean, he didn't break his foot stepping off the curb. So, right, that's like, that's what happens to 95-year-old people. They step off a curb and break their arm. So I think it's safe to say, you know, Blevins wasn't going to be of any use if he was that fragile. we aren't going to get anything out of Blevins. And they probably, I'm assuming but it's one of the reasons they did the O'Flaherty thing. We spoke on our deadline show about how relievers can get through waivers. And that was the one thing I said that I kind of expected them to do. You know, I mean, to play that reliever market a little bit. Because they're also cheap. You can find guys, you're only paying the prorated dollars on these
right?
It shouldn't be a lot of money. I think they could still play that game one more time. You shouldn't have to give up anything either. Like, you should be able to give literally a body to these teams, because if you're going to pay, if they're free agents at the end of the year and you're going to pick up, you know, the $700,000 left, we know how that works. We've been on the other side of those the last few years. We should be able to get another guy, and we you know, we should go ahead and try, and you know, hopefully we do. And in the meantime, I will be magnanimous as with all this winning, you know, about O'Flaherty's debut, and just chalk it up to, you know, we'll see what happens. And I don't think in general we're going to see him for more than one batter and one lefty batter. It was a weird situation because of the big lead. And he did get the first batter out. So who knows? Maybe
that's
if
true.
You limit him to that very, you know, limited role, which was the role Blevins was in, right? Blevins wasn't pitching to 20 guys at a time. Who knows? You know, so we'll see what he can do. But overall, the guy that's scaring me is Familia. You know, he's not quite, you know, I'm looking for the bounce back because we do sort of go where he goes.
No, he is the irreplaceable, you know, arm in that pen. And if he's not right, it is very different, and it is a big problem. But we're going to focus on the positive right now.
Yeah.
We're going to bring in our very special guest. Let's bring in our very special guest. We've got Ed Marcus with us. Ed Marcus, a great all-around Mets fan. He currently is writing for Mets Police. He's a guy who, you know, he's been a Mets fan a long time, so I'm sure he's going to give us his perspective on how it feels to actually have this kind of positivity running through the Mets fan base right now. Ed, you're on the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast with Vinny and Mike. How are you tonight?
Good evening, gentlemen. And how'd you know that was me that was yelling at Mookie?
I there's no way you were at a James Taylor concert. You're a metal.
Hey, I love almost all music, but no, I wasn't there. But, I mean, I've seen fire, I've seen rain, and this is actually the most positive thing I've seen coming out from the Mets probably since just before the collapse in 2007.
Oh, yeah, great stuff, Ed. And so I take it you're on board with the, you know, what I call a positive train that we're all on right now.
How can you not? I mean, especially after, you know, going through the fire that was last week. I mean, it's funny. I mean, I guess it was DeComo. He had those tweets where they were pretty much all emojis about day per day, how everything progressed. And, I mean, especially you start off, Sandy brings up Conforto, and then he makes that good trade. I mean, for, you know, for Kelly Johnson and Juan Uribe. And that puts them on a bit of a roll. And so what happens? Then you have the, you know, a couple wins, and then you have that implosion pretty much of the Carlos Gomez trade, or as I refer to as the botched abortion. I mean, you get all the fallout of that, whether it was from the money or whether it's from his balky hip or whatever the hell it was. And then the, you know, Wilmer being on the field and everybody knew he was allegedly traded, except for the manager, which is like how, I mean, disconnected is Sandy from, you know, Terry, and then you get the next day's fallout from all that, especially that horrible, horrible, you know, implosion to the Padres. And I blame the umpire more than I do Familia or Terry Collins on that. Then to last Friday, I mean, geez, who would have thunk it that we would have gotten Chapman? I was gearing myself up because from the sources I were talking to, they told me pretty much aim for Venable or, you know, Bruce. We're not going to be touching Chapman. And here we are with Chapman. Gave up pretty much a guy that's going to be a very good middle of the rotation starter, and a guy that might be a mop-up guy or, you know, or a specialist in, you know, in the bullpen if he ever makes it up there. So, I mean, I'm stoked. And a 66-game winning streak? I mean, Jesus, I'm going out of my head right now with excitement.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. And so one quick one, because it's just worth thinking about now that all the dust is settled. And right, we didn't really hear Cespedes for the Mets until I started first hearing that is a possibility an hour before the trade deadline. So mm-hmm. now that the dust has settled, and we did a podcast that with Steve Keen pre deadline, Vinny and I, and this was before his name had come up. It was the Monday before the deadline. And we were already, meaning Vinny and I, banging the Carlos Gomez drum. That's the guy we actually wanted. Now, though, dust has settled. Cespedes is here. Gomez isn't. And I think we would both agree we like both players. Who do you like better? Like, are you upset? Is there anything upset about it? Or do you say, in the end, I like this guy better anyhow?
You know something? It's... apples, in my opinion, it's almost apples to oranges because Gomez is a good player. Gomez is not an elite player. He's a good second-tier outfielder. He's got the speed. He's got some power and everything. But you know something? He's not a game-changing bat like Cespedes. It's like I've been pretty much talking to any person that will listen to me, and I wrote getting my post today over at Mets Place, is the thing that was missing from here is – we needed a Don Clendenin / Keith Hernandez type of bat. And we got that with Cespedes. I mean, the unfortunate thing is that he's not under contract for next season, and I honestly doubt that we're going to be able to sign him because he's going to be testing the free agent waters. There's no doubt about that. And unfortunately, you don't get quality. You're not going to be able to get any type of player in return for that. But it was this is a season-changing deal. Before that, I mean, before you had Juan Uribe and Kelly Johnson, okay, these guys, they're probably going to miss the wild card. You get Uribe and you get, Kelly Johnson, okay, you're going to be on the fringe, if not maybe the last wild card spot. You got yourself Cespedes here. If you are not in that mix to overtake the Nationals or to secure yourself a spot in the wild card, then I mean, I don't know what it is, because we've always chastised this team or this front office and ownership for not going that extra mile, for bringing in the guy that's a difference maker. We got a difference maker right now. And you know something? He might not have hit a home run yet, but he is helping out, with this lineup like I've not seen probably since you had Carlos Delgado in this lineup.
Oh, I agree. I think he's a big deal. And the way I would sum it up, and again, I was, let's get Gomez, before the fact, is... I liked the fact a great deal. Vinny had brought it up on the podcast with me that Gomez was signed for that second year. Because then it's not just a 2015 thing, and we know the pitching is still going to be here. But now that everything has happened, from a 2015 standpoint, I do feel we got the better player. And hey, we're in it now. So my current focus is very much, I have to tell you, I don't care. I don't want to. People keep talking to me about 2016. You know what? I'm not the GM. I'm not the owner. I don't even care right now. We're in a pennant race. Let's win the World Series in 2015, then I'll worry about 2016. I haven't seen a World Series in a while. And I'll be the first guy to say, win a World Series in 2015. I don't care what happens to the 2016. I'm not a pig. So we got a really interesting team now. Very personally, I can tell you, I am very pleased with the maneuvers that were, accomplished in a pretty quick period there that last week. It looked bad for a while, but it all worked out.
But not just that. Didn't the Nationals look scared over this past weekend, watching them on TV? I mean, didn't they kind of look like, oh, my God, what happened? It's almost like they realized, and I don't care what Worth says, I don't care what Harper says, they look scared, and that is the best feeling that you could have. I remember back in 86 when the Mets went into St. Louis, and they swept the Cardinals in mid-April, late April, I believe it was. And I remember seeing, I think it was John Tudor, and he was going up against Dwight Gooden, and just seeing Tudor's face, you just saw that he knew that we were, and that, that they couldn't, hold a candle to this Mets team.
Well, one thing I found interesting about the Nats had a lot to say this weekend. They did a lot of talking, and it doesn't bother me. But one of the things I've, and the Mets didn't, they just played. And one of the things I found in life, just in general in life, is usually people that keep talking themselves up are trying to convince themselves. So, you know, my takeaway is, oh, who are you trying to convince? You know, Jason Worth, me or you? Because if you really believe in yourself, you don't have to tell anybody. You just do it. So I like the fact that they were chirping as much as they were, because I took that to mean that the Panic City maybe has shifted a little south. And that's okay with me. Just to segue to something a little different, because pitching is really what's driving this. I mean, it's great to have some offense, but what's really been driving the team all along was the pitching, the starting pitching. And it's just continued these last six games to be outstanding. We've got another pitcher all of a sudden. Remember, he was very interesting to watch when he first started out, which is Matt, is starting to getting ready to return. What do you think is going to happen? I mean, we're going to go back to six, or what do you think they're going to do when he's ready to roll?
That's the million-dollar question. Honestly, I can't answer that. I mean, we saw what happened when they implemented the six-man rotation. It seemed like the only two people that were really, benefiting for that was Colon and Nice. I mean, Harvey looked off his game when they were doing that. I mean, DeGrom is DeGrom, and Syndergaard. I mean, could you predict that this kid would adapt this quickly and, come across as such so mature on the mound, and doesn't seem like anything rattles him? Maybe the first couple of games, but since then he's been shut down. I mean, you need Matt in there. I mean, I don't know. Do you pretty much put either Colon or Nice into long relief, or do you go for a six man? Honestly, I can't tell. All I know is this is a good problem to have.
Of course, yes. And we could say the same thing. Hopefully a good problem to have. I think it's a little trickier problem if David Wright is able to return, because I think that what makes it a little bit trickier problem is, Uribe and Johnson are solid players, and obviously Wright's a better player, and if he's on the field, that just makes the bench, that much stronger, and that's great, as long as he's performing the way David Wright can really, perform. But because he's David Wright, if he thinks he can play and he wants to play, it's tough not to play him.
Exactly. In my opinion, in a perfect world, if Wright comes back in, unfortunately, because Kadir is a good guy. Unfortunately, he's having a bad year. I mean, is he
right
over the hill? More than likely, should he be a bench player? Most definitely. But if Wright comes back, you have to figure it's going to be Campbell that goes. That's going to be, has to be jettisoned, and I hate to say it, it's probably going to be Conforto. I, as much as I want to see this kid stay up here, and he deserves to be up here, I think they're, with his options, they're going to send him down, because I think, they want to keep a constant or a locked outfield out there. And so I figure if Nieuwenhuis comes back off the DL, or even Kadir, I mean, you're going to have somebody going down. And so I have a feeling it's going to be Conforto. Wright's not going to be every day. I will doubt if Wright's going to be every day. If, we have, about 60 games left?
Right.
I would have to figure a little more than 60. I got to figure that, David Wright's going to probably play, if he is healthy, at least between 65% and 70% of the remaining games, and then you're gonna have yourself Uribe and Kelly Johnson in there. I mean, that's not a bad problem to have. Also, like we're talking about the pitching staff, at least you have yourself competent veterans that can play and that can hit and that can field. So, I mean, I'm not so worried in that regard.
Okay, that's great. And then I'm going to ask you about something else that may or may not worry you, though, and it's kind of connected. The roster has improved. I don't think there's any of us would doubt that. And we even felt the roster was improved in April, right? And because of starting pitching, et cetera. And now, clearly, it's been improved again through the deadline. But the same guy is sitting in the manager's chair. And we have not seen him anywhere near a pennant race with this team. Any worries about Terry Collins from you?
Always. Always. I mean, I still see him as the weak link. I mean, I'm happy to see that this team's winning because he is a good, like, once again, I met Terry Collins. He's a good guy. He's the type of guy that you root for, I mean, and that you want to see succeed. I don't totally get the Terry hate and everything, although, you know, I mean, he is as good as the team that he's given. I mean, I think that's the thing that we're seeing here. But do I think if this team makes it to the playoffs or beyond, does he deserve to be here? I don't want to say yes, but I'm going to have to say yes. Because, I mean, it's not like we're a Yankees organization that will fire a manager that's been to the World Series, you know, the next day, you know, the day after the World Series.
No, I would say not.
I mean, until this team, unless this team totally implodes or he just says something, you know, or that totally rubs ownership the wrong way, he's going to be here, and you have to make it to the playoffs. I can imagine him getting another two-year extension. Yeah, I mean, and that's not the most popular thing to say. But you know something? If he's getting results, you cannot dispute that. And crystal ball, he's going to be there next year, unless he announces his retirement. You know, that's what I see.
I think, I do agree with you that this is no indication that he's anything but a good guy. Second of all, me personally, I've always felt about him that I don't think he's a problem per se. I know a lot of people flip out at some of the moves he makes. I also feel myself that that's all overrated because everybody thinks they're smart and they want to point out when the manager makes a mistake when the games are going on. I think the heavy-duty managing goes on where we don't see it. You know, behind the scenes, and every time I've had a conversation with an Adam Rubin or a Jared Diamond or any of these guys that are in the clubhouse, they're respectful of Collins, and they give him a lot of praise. So I take a lot of stock in that. I still can't mix it all together and come out with a guy that, like, excites me that he's the manager of the Mets. But I do think the team can win with him. Yeah, but you know, I wouldn't say the team would win because of
No, he's kind of like Yogi Berra in that respect. You know, if I can draw an analogy over here. No, I mean, Yogi Berra was a very competent manager. I mean, he played the percentages, he and everything, but he was not a great manager. He was not a great, you know, tactician. I give the 73 Mets more credit for themselves pulling together and, you know, muscling through and taking that division than I do giving, you know, Yogi Berra any of that, you know, credit. And he does deserve credit. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to malign him in that respect. But, you know, I mean, especially when you got to the World Series. And, look, I was a year old when the 73 World Series happened. But from everything I've heard, what I've read, and what I've been told, it's amazing in some respects that the Mets did not – the Mets should have won that in probably about five games. It was a couple of, you know, bad plays or bad calls by umpires, but also some bad managing decisions by, you know, Yogi Berra, especially Game 7, starting Tom Seaver when I believe George Stone is the gentleman that should have been, from what everybody's saying, should have gotten
the
start. Because
there was some sequences. It was a tough series to lose in 7, I can tell you. And in fact, yeah, on a personal level, 73 for me is rougher than social, let's say, in 88. You know, 73, I mean, you know, you're up 3-2 at some point, and we could have won it in 5. I could go back, and I could go on, and I won't. About 73, but yes, you're right. It was amazing we got there. The team only won, I think, 82 games. But once we got there, they should have won that series. But, you know, ancient history, as they say. Vinny, before I release Ed into the wild, do you have any question? Any last questions for him tonight?
Well, first of all, I do, Ed. I have to thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate you.
Thank you for having
coming
me
on. But unfortunately, I do this to everybody. I have to put you on the spot.
Okay.
Right now, gun to your head. It looks like it's going to be a game and a half lead. The Nationals are up 8-3 in the bottom of the eighth.
Right.
When we get to October, at the end of the day, October 4th, 162 games done, will the Mets be playing postseason baseball?
That's a million-dollar question. And gun to my head, I think the answer will be yes. Will they win the division? That remains to be seen, because this game, I mean, even though the Mets have the playing the weaker schedule than the Nationals, I could see this being like 1985 going down to the last week of the season. You know, it's just, that's what it's going to come up to. And well, you know, if it comes down to it and the Washington Nationals are end up edging out the Mets, I do still think the Mets are going to play well enough to get that second wild card berth, because I just can't see the Cubs or San Francisco playing up to that, you know, caliber level. And even the Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh lost A.J. Burnett, probably one of their better, you know, starters this side of Garrett Cole. I cannot see the Mets not playing meaningful games after this, you know, after the regular season's over. I got to, you know, say they're going to be in the playoffs at the very least.
And I love to hear it, and I got to tell you, I agree with you.
Guys,
well, thank
they're
you.
Winning the division. Guys, they're winning the division by 5 games.
Let's hope. From your mouth. And this is coming from the guy who last year I've had arguments about Sandy Alderson not being a good general manager.
You know, I'm staying focused on the field right now. Let's put it that way.
I hear you.
Yeah.
But thank you for having me on, guys. I greatly appreciate it.
Thanks again. Maybe we'll try to get you on again before the end of the season.
Please. I'm always happy to come and oblige.
Great. Thanks a lot, man.
Take care, Ed.
Yeah, have a night, guys.
Night.
Great spot from Ed, Mike.
He's charged up.
Yeah, he is. And but look, I understand that where the way they're playing right now, even with, you know, not withstanding things like, you know, almost blowing 8-0 leads and blah blah blah, they just look like they can do no wrong. So of course you're going to say yes, they're going to make it. But Mike, I do feel it. I think this, we have the earmarks. Put it that way. The Flores storyline, the trade that didn't happen and then turning into Cespedes, you know, all of that gives you kind of that intangible stuff, right? Which a lot of times successful, memorable seasons have those things. But let's not also forget the pitches we have. You know, it's not just because of a black cat running in front of somebody. It's because you're putting out an ace young pitcher every night. He throws 96 miles an hour. That's what's going on here. And,
well,
you know, that's...
Absolutely. And I'm happy you brought up the black cat, because I'm sticking with my current five games we win the division with. And the season that I don't compare this team to 86. This, to me, is very similar to 69. In 69, they made the Clendenin trade. It didn't take off immediately. The deadline was, you know, a little earlier back then. It was June 15th. You look at how the Mets performed in August and September of 69, the numbers are eye-popping. You know, eye-popping. Why? Because it was Seva, then it was Kuzman, then it was Gentry. Yeah, like, right? Day after day after day. And then as long as they got enough offense, and once they had Clendenin and they did have Jones, they didn't have AG, blah, 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 right? Once they got enough offense, you just couldn't beat the team. Well, what did we say all year? Remember how many 1-0 games this team lost? You know, how many 2-1 games this team lost? We kept saying, if we have any hitting, we'd like win like crazy. Well, guess what? You know, it's not just Cespedes. I mean, look, just that Uribe and Johnson change, you know, alone was enough to maybe not guarantee we were going to make the playoffs, but it was going to really change the dynamic. Just that move. Now you
in. No, that's a great point.
Probably a bigger bat than I thought we were going to get. And I think that you combine that with, and as nice as all that is, Uribe is nice, Johnson is nice, Cespedes is nice. You know, we're all standing up for Wilma, right, and all that. But why are they really winning? The other night, when I wasn't there, I was sitting, the guy at the concert that kept pulling out my phone to check the score against the Marlins, and all I kept seeing is Mets losing 1-0. But Nice is holding them down. This isn't supposed to be like, you know, all back of the rotation guy.
And then all of a sudden it's 1-1. And again, we hold them down. We hold them down. And eventually we break through and we win, right? We win that game.
Right.
The pitching's there every day. The pitching just keeps coming at you every day. How, now that we have some hitting, how do we have a sustained losing streak with this pitching? I don't see it.
You know what? I think you're right. I think that is the big difference, is the pitching is here. And not to look too far ahead, Mike, because you don't want to count your chickens. But that's
right.
Why you're, it's not one of these years where you're thinking, wouldn't it be great to just make the postseason? And look, I know you got to walk before you run. I'm not a crazy person. But you think to yourself, when you watch the postseasons of recent years, you know, the Giants, they had good pitching and they had Madison Bumgarner go nuts is why they won the World Series, right? And you just think to yourself, we have three or perhaps four guys. Let's be a little bit, you know, put our conservative hats on for a minute. You have three guys in Harvey DeGrom and Syndergaard. Any one of them, you can reasonably say, could become Madison Bumgarner in the playoffs. And that means if the other two are good, not Madison Bumgarner, think about that. You don't just have to win his games. You have the, you know, you have the other guys to, you know, be in, you know, dominant pitchers in their own right. So it
Absolutely.
Makes you think if you can get there, you could really, really do some damage. Let's talk for a minute, though, Mike. You, one of the things you mentioned, I think Ed might have brought it up about the Mets schedule. Look, the rest of August, the Mets right now, they finished their road trip with three games in Tampa. Then they have a homestand against four games against Colorado and three against Pittsburgh. Now, Pittsburgh is the best team that the Mets will play in the month of August, but it's at Citi Field. And as Ed said, A.J. Burnett is on the disabled list. He will not be back for that series. And then after that month of this, for this month, they have two games in Baltimore. They have a road trip with three in Colorado and four in Philadelphia. And then they come home for three games against the Boston Red Sox. And that's essentially, that takes you to August 30th. We won't go beyond that. But out of the teams we just talked about, we talked about Colorado, Philly, Boston, even Baltimore. I mean, these are teams with losing records. I mean, Baltimore may be just over 500 now, but still. Teams with losing records. That, you know, with the Mets pitching, with the Mets momentum, they should be able to really do some damage during this time period. And the best team that they face is Pittsburgh at home without Burnett. So you have to think that that's the kind of schedule that the Mets should be able to do some damage. Look, let's not get crazy. I know you're thinking even more optimistically than me that they could run away.
I'm scaring you.
You know, look, I'll take a step back, Mike. Oh, and by the way, the Nationals did just close out their game. They won 8-3.
They didn't bring in O'Flaherty.
They did. You know, that would have been – then we would have had a chance. But, no, take a step back and say with the schedule I just articulated, there's no reason to think that the Nationals will run away from them. So if we're going to be conservative, you would say, based on who we have left to play for this month, we should be heading into September in pretty good shape.
Exactly. And you mentioned how it was nice to see that they didn't have a letdown when they went to the Marlins, another bad team instead. But you saw as they pretty much just wiped them out, you know, the ninth inning last night, the drama, you know, the ninth inning last night notwithstanding. Well, I don't know. Again, I keep looking at it and saying, how do you have a letdown when the reality is the team is driven by starting pitching? The starting pitches, they're never going to let. You know, they only pitch once every 5 days, 6 days, sometimes on this staff, 7 days. When it's their turn to get the ball, think Matt Harvey's going to take a day off because of who he's pitching against? Like, you know, he's not getting the ball again for another 5 days.
Right.
And so I think that really helps because, you know, even if for some reason they got in, you know, the old story to get in at 5 a.m. and we hear all the soft stories, they're tired, whatever, that affect the offense a little bit. Well, the pitcher was sent to wherever they need to be the day before, rested and ready. And,
he throws a shutout every time. How big can it go?
No, you're right. I think that that's what helps. Now, look, I also look, and I try to be realistic. I'm not a negative Mets fan by any means. But
no, you're not.
The next three games against Tampa, look, Tampa's better than Miami,
right.
And the pitchers that they're putting out, they got
absolutely.
Jake Odorizzi, and they got, they're facing both Odorizzi and Archer in these three games.
Yeah.
But I want to win the series. I'm just saying this is going to be a little different. I don't think we're
absolutely.
Going to beat them. But I do think we are the better team and we have momentum, and we should take two out of three. And that to me is the way that you start thinking about this team, and it's different because you are a complete team. And it used to be, and when I say used to be, I'm not talking about ancient history. I'm talking about 10 days ago, where if you were facing a series with pitchers like that, you know, above average major league pitchers, that you would say, okay, we're not going to score those games. So the only way we're going to win is if Harvey pitches great and the other team makes a couple errors. We don't think that way anymore. You think, all right, fine. You know, maybe we'll get held down to two or three runs, but then we'll win because we'll win 3-2. And it's such a different mindset, and it's very welcome. It really is. I mean, I was talking to someone else, Mike, about this, joking that the actions of the general manager and the offense that the team has put together over the last week makes you feel like a real team. And everybody laughs like we weren't a real team before. But it's actually true. That's how you feel now. You used to feel like the Mets were not operating both in the front office and on the field as a true, complete major league team. And almost overnight, you view them as not just a major league team, but as a team that's upper echelon. It's remarkable, Mike.
Right, it was like a switch was flipped. But we spent the first half year of the season with a theme of saying, listen, the starting it was running to script. The starting pitching is great. The bullpen actually had been solid, right? So the pitching overall, great. Offense looked very bad on paper before the year, and sure enough, it's horrendous. And then we kept saying, it's just a little odd, right? I mean, remember, Uribe and Johnson are nice players. I don't mean this as a slight against them, but they're not usually the type. Those are not usually the types of moves the team makes. And the fan base, it has the level of improvement it made to the Mets situation. We kept talking about how imbalanced the team was. So in a way, and this is not a knock on Sandy, it's just sort of explaining the situation, what I would call explaining the situation of it wasn't going to take, he didn't have to do, the moves were nice. He was relatively aggressive and he did a good job. So I'm not saying this is a criticism of him. But like, look what the Blue Jays did. We didn't go crazy like the Blue Jays. We brought in a few good plays and one difference maker. And like, it's dramatic though, because we had no offense and we didn't need much.
That's a great point. That is a great point. We didn't need much. And the incremental upgrade, what you were looking,
right.
what you had, It
right.
ended up being huge. I mean, think about that. You're saying Kelly Johnson was a huge incremental upgrade. The funny thing is, it truly was an incremental upgrade, and it made a big difference. But in total, when you put these pieces together, it changes everything. And I'm going to give you another example, Mike, of how these moves, which other than Cespedes, maybe they were small, but you look at them now differently. The other news, we talked before Ed came on and joined us about the other positive news about David Wright appearing to be on track to actually come back. Well, the other thing that happened is this, you know, Michael Kadire is also rehabbing. He supposedly is going to play a minor league game on Saturday, I believe, or tomorrow perhaps. And they expect him to be activated probably Monday in New York. Now, you might say, well, Michael Kadire wasn't doing anything, so what's the big deal? But again, now when you have all these – he wasn't doing anything. He probably felt like he had to be, you know, a one-man murderer's row when David Wright was out of the lineup because, you know, the rest of the lineup was so weak. Lucas Duda was struggling. All of these things, and he did not perform, Michael Kadire. But now you say, okay, he's going to come back. He's going to be – maybe he's going to bat seventh. Maybe we're going to want him to play every other day. And you think to yourself, you know, maybe in that role, he actually will be productive. We're not expecting that much out of him. It changes your whole perspective.
To accentuate your point in agreement, I'll ask you a question. So during this last 10 days, who's been the Mets' hottest hitter?
Lucas Duda.
He's been on the team all along. But do we really think that the first two home runs came the first game that Johnson and Uribe were on the team?
That's true.
And so people always like to act like all this stuff is a coincidence, and they pull out all the charts to show that one guy's got nothing to do with the other guy. That's not what I'm seeing. I think
Juan has been linked,
and it definitely affects things.
I think that while you just said that Lucas Duda was on the team, I am convinced 100,000%, that's the percent, that Lucas Duda would not have put up the numbers he has put up in the last 10 days if those trades were not made. I understand he's the same player playing the same games. It would have not happened if it wasn't for these moves.
He hit a home run when they walked Cespedes in front of him. If John Mayberry Jr. was batting in front of him, he wouldn't have walked him.
Yeah, you got that right. So, listen, Mike, we're joined now from Artie from Brooklyn. Now, listen, we have to hear from Artie. You know, Artie usually, you know, especially in the offseason, you know, screaming for the Mets to do something, you know, upset about the situation. I got to hear if Artie has been swept up by the massive, you know, positivity train that's going on here. Artie, you're on the Blue and Orange Nation Talking Mets podcast. Do you believe?
I believe, baby. I can't believe that we're doing it, but I believe. This is unbelievable. I'm still pitching myself. I can't. I just when the Gomez trade was nixed, and I'm sitting there and I'm going, please get Bruce. Please get Bruce. And we end up getting Cespedes. Now, I don't know. I don't want to mention any competitors here. But the Pope says the Mets are out of the Cespedes deal, that there's no way that they're getting him, and we get him. That was unbelievable. And I agree totally with you guys, man. If Cespedes wasn't on this team, Duda would not be hitting, you know, 9 home runs in 8 games. He was hot in April, but not like this. Not like this. And I got my defibrillator ready for the bullpen. Think about this, okay?
I heard that they're working on that. The defibrillator night is coming.
Yeah, because we're going to need it. Let me tell you.
You got to be one of the first 15,000 fans to get it, though.
It comes with the Jesse Orozco bobblehead now. Perfect.
Everybody else has got to live at their own risk.
I can't, you know. I'm sitting there, and, you know, I talk about the Artie Jinx. I go, it ain't nothing. Not even the Artie Jinx could come into effect. And I'm sitting there as the runs are passing by, and I'm going, should I shut this off, actually? It ain't nothing. Come on, man. And then, so the other thing, too, think about what this team would be like if one of the brainiacs on this team didn't think that he would actually get drug tested again after he failed, I don't know how many times, and got suspended for freaking 80 games. And if a guy could walk on the sidewalk regularly, think about what this bullpen would be like.
Right, well, that promise he was walking on his hands.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right, man. Take care.
Great to hear from you, Art. You know, it's great. It's just great.
He's charged up.
He is fired up, and I don't blame him. And look, he made a little bit of a reference to the bullpen, you know, and the defibrillator. That was a great line, defibrillator line. I got to give it to you. But look, all joking aside, and again, not being an alarmist, I do think the Mets have to explore, you know, further, you know, O'Flaherty aside, I do think the Mets have to explore fortification of the bullpen options. Now, look, you know, you had said it on the podcast we did at post-deadline about, you know, the possibility of getting guys through waivers, and O'Flaherty is evidence of that. But even beyond that, you know, they're going to have to take some chances perhaps with some guys from the minor leagues. I mean, a name that's trendy to hear right now is Josh Smoker, who's in Double A. He's somebody who's intriguing. He's a lefty. He throws very hard. He was actually a number one pick by, I think, the Nationals in 2007. But he's had an injury-plagued minor league career, and he has not pitched above Double A. However, this year in Double A, he is lighting it up. Do you think that the Mets, you know, out of the three options, which would be make a trade, let's say four options, Mike. If the options are A, make a trade and try to bring somebody in from outside the organization. B, bring up a guy like Smoker who is a Double A guy, which could be risky. C is go with guys like bring up Logan Verrett and Eric Adell, who supposedly is rehabbing now. Or D, do nothing, roll the dice that Familia, Carlos Torres, Tyler Clippard, O'Flaherty, Gil Martin, and Robles will just be able to hang on over the next 55 games. Out of those four options, Mike, if you were a betting man, what do you think is going to happen?
I'm going to take option five, and I'm going to explain my option. The first thing that needs to happen is we got to get through the next 24 days with the bullpen. And I think there's one, again, I mentioned that you can get these guys through waivers. O'Flaherty is, you know, already got through waivers. That's one example. I think maybe something a little better than O'Flaherty, hopefully he got throws with his right arm, can get through waivers. It's not a lot of money because you're only picking up, you know, 45 days of a guy. If you get the guy through before the 31st and you get him, and he's quality, you have him for the postseason, I still think there's another guy coming. We shouldn't have to give up much of anything if we're willing to pay the guy, you know, whoever he is. I'm not talking about Craig Kimbrell here, you know. I'm talking about like a solid setup man who's in the last year of his contract. I don't have the list out. I think we can get a guy like that and give up no more than, you know, like when the guy we got, Chris Carter, for Billy Wagner 1 year. In a similar situation.
Right.
I think we can get them for next to nothing. And I think it's going to happen. I think that it's clear that we're going for it. These guys are looking at everything, and I do think we'll get that guy. Now, that's sort of what I say, you know, part of it. Then, everybody you named, Smoke, Verrett, Goodell, you name them. If you can think of them, we're going to see them on September 1st. They're just going to...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the rules now. And we're going to go with the 20-man pitching staff. And I hope everybody, if you're going to the game, you know, sit down, relax. You're going to be there a while. There's going to be a lot of pitching changes.
Hey, look, I normally I hate that aspect of September baseball, Mike. I do. Because I don't think it's fair. I think it helps bad teams because – all of a sudden, their bullpen has these guys in it that you've never seen before, you know, blah, 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 blah. However, I will be a hypocrite, and I will say I love it this year because I do think that that would be a Band-Aid that will help the Mets problem. And again, I'm not going to reiterate it. We just went through the Mets schedule in August. Based on that schedule, they should be able to hang around until September 1st when they can do that.
Right, and everything, and look, the pitches, if they get Matt's back, I'm thinking they're going to go to the sixth man. That lowers the innings a little bit on the other guys. That's my guess, the way they're going to go when they get Matt's back. And one thing that happens then is they can continue to ride the starters. I mean, Harvey could have threw another inning, except they figured they didn't need him to. You know, they were up 8-0. These starters, the way they're pitching, we're pulling them because of the innings limits. They could keep going. I mean, meaning they never get touched.
I want to say we picked on Terry in the past. I was a big fan of that pulling him last night. I don't think
he's
done enough of that.
Oh, I'm not complaining about it. I understand why he did it. Right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No, there was a 15-2 game last weekend. I think Harvey's last start, actually, that
yes.
He let him pitch the seventh inning, and that was not needed. And it boggled my mind because I just kept thinking, aren't we trying to figure out how to save innings here and there? So I love that he did it last night. And we only have another couple of minutes, so just the last thing I'll say about that is there was a little bit of press the last couple of days that, you know, there was a comment from Terry about the innings limit and what is it going to mean. I am thoroughly convinced, Mike, that it is a non-issue. I refuse to believe that if the Mets get to the postseason, they are not going to use these guys because they passed their innings limit. I know that that's what happened with Strasburg, but I also think the fact that we have three, four of them, you know, I think the only way it's going to impact us is we're not going to go to a three-man rotation if we're in the postseason that we're going to use four. And so, you know, Matt Harvey or Jacob DeGrom or whoever starts game one is not going to start 1, 4, and 7. I think that's
If we get to the postseason, they're going to pitch all these guys.
They
should.
I completely agree.
And yeah. The Nationals should have pitched Strasburg when they were in the postseason.
Yeah, ask them now. I don't care what they say publicly. Right. You give the GM a couple of drinks in the lobby and ask him what he thinks. You know he regrets that decision.
Right. They saved him for all the postseasons they haven't made.
Exactly. All right, so Mike, we only have another minute or so to go. So before we wrap up on Met of the Week, there can only be one, Mike.
The birthday boy, no?
It has to be the birthday boy, Wilma Flores. I love the folk hero aspect. I love the standing ovation every time he comes to the plate. I'm just, you know, it's a little too early, in my opinion, because I would love it to go on for the remainder of the season. But we got, you know, 50 games left, four at-bats a game. I don't think people are going to stand up for him 200 times. But I want them to keep doing it. It's such a great story because we talked about it. We talked about it offline. We talked about it online. The crying episode was if the Mets did not make a trade, if the last transaction was the failed Gomez trade and the season fell apart at that point, and there was no offensive upgrades, leaving Wilma Flores on the field to cry when he thought he was traded would have been symbolic of Mets, just, you know, of LOL Mets, even though, you know, I despise that phrase. But it would have been a symbol of that. And now it's totally flipped that Wilma Flores, instead of being a symbol of the organization's ineptitude, is now the folk hero. I love it, Mike.
Yeah, it's been, look, the whole year with Wilma's been like a roller coaster. I was, I believe, justifiably very negative about the fact that he was at shortstop. And I think, you know, and all of us were pointing out all along that negativity was not directed at Wilma, who didn't belong there. You know, it was directed at the team that was putting him over there every day. And so, but he was put up with booing from people in the stands over that. And I believe it was their way of trying to boo the decision that he was there. But if you're a player, that's not how you're reading that, right? You're getting booed. And so and we know he was a stand-up guy through all that. Like, he'd make these errors, and you'd be like, why are they keeping him in there? And then he would stand there at the locker every day and say, I got to make that play. It's not like he never once said, like, well, what am I doing there? I'm not a shortstop. You know, I mean, he just stood tall. He's been a stand-up guy. He's been a good, you know, everything we can see from the outside, a good guy. You look for fun stories, and one was a really fun story right now. I hope he's enjoying his birthday. And, you know, I hope he's wishing for a World Series when he blows out the candles, because that's what I'm wishing for.
I hear you, Mike. Well, that about wraps it up. We'd like to thank Ed Marcus for joining us. You're a great spot, great guy. Thanks to Artie from Brooklyn, you know, who glad to see he's on the positivity train. We'll be back at you probably the Mets have an off day on 2 weeks from tonight to Thursday, August 20th. That'll probably be our next show, but Check will be posting it. And I won't even ask, Mike. I'm not even going to do the put you on the spot, because we all know what you're going to say. When we have our next podcast, the Mets are going to be far out in front, that they're going to need a search party to even see them. And I hope you're right. That about does it. Thank you all very much. And we'll talk to you again soon. And of course, let's go, Mets.